Tonight we'll be looking, continuing our look at the life of Jesus Christ, trying to take a closer look that we might be more like Him. Our study is in Mark 15 tonight. Jesus is before Pilate. Mark's account of the trial information about Jesus is very brief. It does not have a purpose of encompassing every detail related to all of the Jewish aspects of the trial and the Roman aspects of the trial. Mark goes through this briefly. He abbreviates the discussion between Pilate and Jesus about the kingdom. He excludes Pilate's early conclusion that Jesus is an innocent man, that there's no fault in him. He skips the symbolic washing of hands by Pilate to free himself from the guilt of the blood of Jesus. And he passes over altogether the sending of Jesus to Herod, who had jurisdiction over Galileans. We'll mention some of these things. It's not our intent tonight to cover every single detail, but we will mention some of the other things from the other gospel writers as we go through our study. But tonight, in Mark 15, in verse 1, we see, early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders and scribes and the whole council immediately held a consultation. And binding Jesus, they led him away and delivered him to Pilate. You remember that they had met at night at the house of Caiaphas, and that certainly was an irregular thing, if not altogether illegal. Early in the morning, we are told by Mark, Jesus was taken into the council chamber for what might be assumed to be an official meeting with the council. And Mark noted that the whole council was present. And if you think about members of the council that you might know specifically who they are, there are two that are mentioned significantly by name in the pages of the New Testament, if you remember, Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea. The members of the council here had a twofold purpose. They needed a formal confirmation of the sentence that was passed on Jesus during the night. And so in Mark's record, Luke's record, Luke tells us that they once again asked Jesus, "If you are the Christ, tell us." And then Jesus replied to that, "If I tell you, you won't believe. And if I ask you a question, you won't answer." And then Jesus refers to himself by the messianic title of the Son of Man. And they knew what that meant. But just for the sake of clarity, they respond to that by saying, "Are you the Son of God then?" And Jesus answered in Luke 22 and verse 70, "Yes, I am." That would have created a tremendous amount of joy among his accusers. As you can gather from reading the text, what further need do we have of witnesses? We have heard out of his own mouth, was what they were saying in Luke 22. It's interesting to note that if Jesus had not testified, they would have had a grand total of zero witnesses against him. That's a very interesting legal point, I think. But there was another matter that had to be settled by this council meeting early in the morning. They had condemned Jesus to death on the charge of blasphemy. But they could not carry out that sentence without the help of the Romans, because they lived under the Roman rule at this time. They couldn't legally execute Jesus according to, I believe John's gospel says that. Now, that raises a curious point, because later on, they didn't have any trouble violating the law when they stoned Stephen to death. There's nothing in the record that they appealed to the Romans for permission to do that. They just became so angry at the preaching of Stephen that they just took matters into their own hands and disposed of him very quickly in the book of Acts and Acts chapter 6. But in the case of Jesus, they probably wanted to preserve some semblance of a legal trial, a legal assembly, and a legal conclusion. And so they did this. The Roman governor, of course, wouldn't care anything for the religious charge of blasphemy. So they had to come up with something that would catch the Roman governor's attention in this particular case. They would have to come up with some political charge, which they did. After they did this, the whole body got up, they bound Jesus and delivered him to Pilate. Mark's record tells us they led him away and delivered him to Pilate. Pontius Pilate was the current governor over Judea and also Samaria. And as a governor of this area, at least two primary responsibilities Pilate had. The first one being to keep the peace. And then the second one being to collect taxes for his government. The praetorium, where the government people were located, especially during this time of the feast, was considered as Gentile territory. Therefore, the Jewish Sanhedrin, according to John's Gospel, did not enter into the praetorium so that they would not be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. But you remember the main Passover meal had already happened. But there were other additional days following Passover where there would be significant feast meals included. And so that's probably what John is referring to when he mentions so that they might eat the Passover. Do you find that interesting? They wouldn't have a bit of trouble condemning an innocent man to death, but they don't want to go in where the Gentiles are because they would be ceremonially defiled. Isn't that somewhat interesting to you? When Pilate learned that a Jewish delegation had brought a prisoner, naturally he would want to know, what's this all about? So he goes out to them, according to John's account, and he says, what accusation do you bring against this man? And the Jewish leaders first tried to get Pilate to just go ahead and agree to their sentencing, go ahead and allow them to put Jesus to death. But you know, an astute governor would never do such a thing, would he? You know, that may create a worse situation publicly than not. So the governor would actually want to know, what's this all about? What charges have you brought against him? That sort of thing. And he says to them to dismiss them, first, take him yourselves and judge him according to your law. And then the leaders told the governor specifically why they had brought Jesus to him, that John records for us in his gospel in chapter 18, we're not permitted to put anyone to death. The Jews had been allowed certain concessions, but that was not one of them. The Romans reserved the right to be able to put someone to death for a capital crime. John pointed out that this particular situation made it possible for the fulfillment of exactly what Jesus said about how he would die. You remember he told his closest disciples that he would be crucified. And the Jews' natural method of ending someone's life that they determined to be a criminal was by stoning. The Romans were the ones who were into the crucifixion. The word death, I think, would have caught the governor's ear. We have sentenced him to death, or we're not permitted to put anyone to death. That would have grabbed him, I think. Because now he realizes that they're talking about something that could be a capital offense. The leaders set before Pilate the threefold charge that they have contrived against Jesus that Luke records for us. This is somewhat interesting, I think. We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. So they give this threefold charge. The first charge of that was very, very vague. He's misleading our nation. The second was untrue. He never advocated that people not pay their taxes, as we noted from a passage of Scripture that we read this morning. He never advocated that. But the third was somewhat misleading as well. Jesus was a king, but not in a political sense, not in an earthly kingdom sense, not in any sense that Pilate would have to worry that someone would come in with a sword and remove his head and sit on his throne. Not in that way at all. So, Pilate wants to know. Pilate wants to question Jesus, and in verse 2 of chapter 15 in Mark's Gospel, Pilate questioned him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" An appropriate question for him to ask. And Jesus answered him, and he said, "It is as you say," in the New American Standard Version. Pilate went back to his chambers. He had Jesus brought before him. The allegation that concerned the governor was not whether or not Jesus claimed to be king. Pilate asked, "Are you the King of the Jews?" And his response was really a standard Hebrew expression for saying yes. You and I, were in a situation, we would just say yes. Jesus didn't just say yes. According to Mark's record, he said, It is as you say. It is as you say. It's an affirmative, yes. That yes is the answer. Jesus then asked Pilate a question, according to John's account. He says, "Are you saying this on your own initiative, or did someone else tell you about me?" In John 18 and verse 34. He's probably asking the ruler to consider the source of the accusation against him. How did you learn this? Did you learn it by someone who was trying to teach you something good and worthy about God himself? If anyone should have known whether or not Jesus was a threat to Roman peace, it would have been Pilate, wouldn't you think? The governor had the responsibility to keep peace in this region. Would not every little tumult, every little riot, every little disagreement in the public streets of his jurisdiction and the area under his domain come to his attention some way or another so that he could make a decision whether or not he needed to let the police go and investigate or send the military troops or something like that? He had the responsibility to keep the peace. He certainly had ears and eyes sympathetic to the Romans out there in society watching and waiting for any little thing to happen. Certainly he would know if something threatening the peace was going to happen. But on the other hand, if the charge originated with the Jewish leaders, then the allegations against Jesus would naturally be suspect, wouldn't they? The Sanhedrin was hardly noted for its concern over the welfare of the Roman Empire. Pilate acknowledged that the charge came from the Jews, and he urged Jesus to explain what he had done to provoke them in John's Gospel. And Christ answered, not in a way that Pilate would have understood, but Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world," in John 18 and verse 36. And really, that was the heart of the problem. The fact that Jesus had not come as a political, sword-waving king to rid the Jews of the Roman oppression is what caused Jesus so much trouble as to why the Sanhedrin rejected him. Jesus, interestingly, gave proof that his kingdom was not of this world. "If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants would be fighting so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm," John records for us in his Gospel, chapter 18 and verse 36. Well, Pilate would naturally be somewhat baffled by that. So Pilate says, "So you are a king?" Christ replied, "You say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Think of the exchange between Jesus and Pilate as being a sermon opportunity for the Lord to preach a sermon to this governor over his home country. Think of it in that way. He appeals to the governor to consider seriously who he is. And it's an opportunity for Pilate to hear the truth of God and ultimately be saved by that, to be brought into the kingdom. But sadly, the governor just responded, "What is truth?" And then there seems to be an end to the discussion there. Maybe as Pilate leaves that inner chamber and goes out before the people to declare, I don't know why you guys bring him here. He's done nothing wrong. Pilate really didn't understand who Jesus was, but he did understand that Jesus had done nothing worthy of death. The governor went out and announced his verdict. "I find no guilt in him." If Pilate thought this ruling would silence Jesus' enemies, he really misjudged the whole situation, didn't he? Luke tells us in Luke 23 in verse 5, "But they kept on insisting, saying, 'He stirs up the people, teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee, even as far as this place.'" Luke records for us, "The chief priests began to accuse him harshly," in chapter 15 and verse 3. "Then Pilate questioned him again, saying, 'Do you not answer? See how many charges they bring against you?' But Jesus made no further answer." So Pilate was amazed. They accused Jesus of many things. And Pilate was amazed that he did not answer all of these charges if it had been anyone else who was standing before the governor with the threat of being put to death. Don't you think those lips would be moving just as fast as they could, trying to explain, "I'm not guilty, I'm not guilty. They've misunderstood. They're not telling the truth. They've misquoted me." Not with Jesus. Jesus refused to answer liars. Jesus did answer legitimate questions. Pilate had pronounced Jesus not guilty, and so what should have happened? The governor says, not guilty. That should be the end of it. Jesus is acquitted, goes his way, the crowd is dispersed. That's not what happened, was it? He didn't want to antagonize the Jews any further, because remember, he had a responsibility for keeping the peace. That was one of his primary duties. And his administration had already seen clashes with people, rebellious attitudes played out in the street, even bloodshed. One more major disturbance, and he could be in trouble with Rome. He could be called back to explain to Caesar himself how he allowed this society to foment a revolution. It was therefore politically expedient for Pilate to keep the Jews happy if he possibly could. Pilate thought he saw a solution to this predicament when he heard the word Galilee. When he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was at Jerusalem at this particular time. Mark doesn't tell us about this. But Pilate here did not solve his problem, he just prolonged it. His soldiers led him to Herod Antipas. Christ was not disposed in any way to satisfy Herod's curiosity. They wanted to see a miracle. Jesus wouldn't perform a miracle. They tried mocking him. They tried dressing him up like a clown and mocking him and saying evil things against him to provoke him to do something or comply with their wishes. Jesus wouldn't play into their hands. He wouldn't play the fool. He was treated with contempt, mocking. We're told a gorgeous robe was put on him in Luke chapter 23, the account of that. Eventually, they tired of that very childish game, and Herod sent him back to Pilate. Pilate became his friends with Herod from that point going forward, but Pilate was still responsible for dealing with Jesus. Looking at Mark's account in verse 6, Now at the feast, he used to release for them any one prisoner whom they requested. The man named Barabbas had been imprisoned with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the insurrection. The crowd went up and began asking him to do as he had been accustomed to do for them. Pilate answered them, saying, "Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?" For he was aware that the chief priests had handed him over because of envy. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to ask him to release Barabbas for them instead. And answering again, Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with him whom you call the king of the Jews?" And they shouted back, "Crucify him." But Pilate said to them, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they shouted all the more, "Crucify him." What a circus. What a scene. No one really knows by whom or when this custom of releasing someone was started, but you could see how it could gain the goodwill of a society for a government official to be in a position to release someone who was in jail. It would certainly appease the family of that person and others in society who were maybe sympathetic with him or knew him or had some sort of relation with him. Pilate saw in this custom really another way that he could possibly release Jesus and he wouldn't have to do what they were requesting him to do. Normally, the governor allowed the Jews free choice regarding whom they wanted to set free, but not in this case. He thought he would limit their choice between two. And so in his mind, let me pick out the worst of the people that we have in jail right now and offer to release either him or Jesus, and maybe they'll see, maybe they won't want this murderer, this insurrectionist, this robber, this really, really bad guy at large in their society, and maybe they'll say, "Well, faced with that choice, we'd rather you release Jesus." They didn't do that, did they? It didn't turn out that way at all. At some point in these proceedings, as Pilate sat there on the judgment seat, his wife sent him a message saying, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him." Matthew tells us that in his gospel account, chapter 27 and verse 19. But the chief priests and the elders were busy persuading the people to release Barabbas. And Pilate really had underestimated the persuasive power of these chief priests and elders, and he may have also miscalculated how the crowd felt about Barabbas. As detestable as a human being as Barabbas was, since he had fought against the Romans, the criminal may actually have been a local hero, if you think about it. Pilate was probably shocked and dismayed when the crowd gave him their decision, and really it caught Pilate off guard, I think. "Give us Barabbas. What shall I do with Jesus, who is called Christ?" "Kill him. Put him to death. Crucify him. Torture him. We don't care what you do, get rid of him." They cried for blood. Pilate tried to appeal to their sense of justice. Now think about it. Does a mob really have a sense of justice? When a mob gathers and everybody gets all fired up and all lathered up, is the first thing on their mind righteousness and justice? Any mob. It never is it? And it certainly wasn't the case in this situation. His listeners had no interest whatsoever in justice. Verse 15 of Mark's chapter 15, wishing to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas for them, and after having Jesus scourged, he handed him over to be crucified. If Pilate found Jesus innocent, why did he suggest for him to be beaten within an inch of his life with a scourging? Why did he do that? The governor had hoped to appease the Jews by having Christ scourged so that he could release him. And the details of a scourging like that are just too horrible. They're horrible. And you've heard them before. They're very horrible. It always ended in the person at least fainting. But sometimes a scourging like that, with the methods that they used, oftentimes killed the person they were scourging. He was then mocked by those responsible for the beating. John says in John 19, beginning in verse 2, and the soldiers twisted together a thorn of crowns, a crown of thorns, put it on his head, and put a purple robe on him. And they began to come up to him and say, "Hail, King of the Jews," and to give him slaps in the face. Now, Pilate must have been thinking, when these people see the ghastly and horrible results of what a Roman scourging will do to a man, they may have no sense of justice whatsoever, but certainly, when they see that, they'll have pity. They'll have mercy on a man being beaten within an inch of his life and blood streaming out of his head from the crown of thorns, and his back looking like raw meat at the grocery store. They'll certainly have pity on him in that situation. Did they? John says, Pilate came out and again said to them, "Behold, I am bringing him out to you so that you may know that I find no guilt in him." Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said to them, "Not this time, behold your king." He says, "This time, behold the man." As if he is saying, "Look, this guy's just a man. He bleeds and he suffers. What possibly has he done wrong? He's just a man that bleeds like any other man. He's not anyone that should cause you any worry." But they wouldn't listen. Pilate evidently misjudged them again. Their thirst for blood. John 19 and verse 6 says, "So when the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, 'Crucify! Crucify!' Pilate said to them, 'Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him.'" There was probably somewhat derision in his voice because he knew, and they knew, that the Roman government didn't just permit Jews to administer crucifixion. The Jewish leaders were not at all intimidated by what Pilate's tactics were. In John 19 and verse 7, the Jews answered him, "We have a law. And by that law, he ought to die because he made himself out to be the Son of God." Here they really switch gears again. They abandon this charge of treason for the moment and return to the charge of blasphemy. Therefore, when Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. Why would he be afraid when he heard them say he made himself out to be the Son of God? I wonder about that. Greek and Roman mythology had many legends about gods who took the form of men. Is that why Pilate became afraid? He returned to his chamber once more and had Jesus brought before him again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from? Where are you from? Where did you come from?" A very interesting question. In other words, are you from earth or from heaven? Maybe one of the dwelling places of the gods, such as Mount Olympus. We're not really told those details. We're told that Jesus gave him no answer. Pilate was evidently a superstitious sort of a person. Not that he was asking this question for any deep religious beliefs that he had. He may have been somewhat superstitious. Pilate sternly pressed him to answer. Pilate asked Jesus, "You do not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you And I have authority to crucify you? Jesus then spoke, but his reply would not have relieved Pilate's mind. He said, you would have no authority over me unless it had been given you from above. For this reason, he who delivered me to you has the greater sin. Pilate has only delegated authority, and it comes from heaven, as any government leader has heaven's authority in that sense. Pilate had not had the same opportunities to learn about Jesus that the former high priest Caiaphas, the current high priest Annas, or any people in the Sanhedrin had. You remember time and time again, the Sanhedrin sent representatives out to Jesus to ask him questions, find out what he was teaching. They had ample opportunity over years of time to consider what he was teaching in view of the prophetic words of God that were given to them in the scrolls that they read every Sabbath day. They had a responsibility. Pilate was not motivated by hatred as Caiaphas was. We're not suggesting that Pilate was without guilt. He certainly did have a measure of guilt, but not the same measure of guilt as those who delivered him to Pilate to be put to death. Not the same measure as the high priest, not the same measure as the Sanhedrin. They would have to bear the greater guilt. As a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him, John tells us. But the Jews cried out saying, if you release this man, you're no friend of Caesar. Everyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar. You know, if you can't get something done with an underling that you're trying to deal with, what do you usually do? I'm going to your boss about you. I'm going over your head. I'm going above you. I'm going to circumvent you altogether. And I'm going to do everything I can do to get you in trouble. Is that the way we do? You know, when a teacher in the classroom of our children, when we can't get satisfaction there, who do we go to? I'm going to the principal. I'm going above your head. Well, it's a similar situation here, isn't it? Any remaining resistance that Pilate would have had to this mob would be crushed right here. If you release this man, you're not a friend of Caesar. The latter part of Tiberius Caesar's reign was really characterized by unreasonable jealousy, suspicion, and cruelty. Many officials were being called back to Rome on the charge of neglecting the security of the state. Pilate didn't want to be in that trouble. Since Pilate's position was shaky at best, he dared not risk the Jews lodging a formal complaint against him. And so he agreed, he relented, he sided in their favor. Pilate's fears were well grounded because a few years later a complaint was lodged and he was relieved of his post, secular history tells us. But in John 19, verse 15, Pilate said to them, shall I crucify your king? The chief priests answered, and this answer is really interesting, I think, we have no king but Caesar. Can you believe those words coming out of these people who are trying to do everything they can possibly do to undermine Roman control of their territory? We have no king but Caesar? No, if Caesar had been a little sharper, I think, than he was, if he'd have known a little bit more information about the Jewish religion, he could have exploded the situation right here with these people claiming total allegiance to Caesar. If we ever needed proof that the hatred clouds the mind and destroys judgment in people, we have it right here, don't we? Wasn't God the ruler of Israel? Didn't they really look for God's representative to come to them as the Messiah who would be their king? I think they did. Pilate called for a basin of water, washed his hands in front of the crowd, saying, I am innocent of this man's blood. Now, because someone says that, does that mean it's truly the case? Was Pilate innocent of the blood of Jesus? He was certainly not. The Jews were familiar with this symbolic act, though. Pilate was trying to absolve himself of responsibility, but the fact remains that as the governor over this territory, he was indeed responsible for the carrying out of appropriate justice by any good standard. And Pilate failed. After Pilate claimed innocence regarding Jesus' death, he said to the crowd, "See that to yourselves." They responded, "His blood shall be on us and our children." You know, you could have nightmares reading these verses. His blood be on us and our children. How bad do you hate somebody and want to put them to death for you to make such a statement like that before God and before human witnesses? His blood be on us, and not only us, our children. You know, if that doesn't cause us to become sickened over those words, we're not using our heads and our hearts when we read that. With those words, the crowd willingly accepted the perpetual guilt of putting to death God's Son. And it played out in such a way that it caused them a lot of trouble. They failed to realize the fate they were bringing upon themselves and their children. Not many years later, the Romans came in and leveled Jerusalem. Now, they don't have atomic bombs like we have today. They didn't have gunpowder and TNT and nitroglycerin and things that could be used as they would be used today to level a place. They left it level. Not one stone standing upon another. That says something, I think. The blood in that city ran deep, without mercy. They sort of got what was coming to them, didn't they? But in a way, they prophesied it here, didn't they? His blood be on us and on our children. You know, human beings are just extremely curious things, aren't they? Aren't they? The level of horrific wickedness that people can sink to and find themselves eaten up with that would make for a situation like this is sometimes just beyond belief. What will people do? And what will they do when they're in a mob? How terrible it was. Pilate said, "Take him away. Crucify him. I relent. I give up my argument. Do what you want to do." What a horrible scene that was. But the story has a more pleasant ending, and we'll talk about that another time. Thank you so much for being in our assembly tonight. If you're with us and you've come to believe that Jesus is indeed the Christ, the Son of God, as He stated He was before Pilate, in that belief, you will repent of sins, confessing before men. You will be baptized for the remission of sins, as the Bible teaches, raised to walk in newness of life as a Christian, striving to be faithful to God all the days of your life. And if we can help you with that tonight, or in any other way to spiritually help you walk closer with God, please come and let us know how we may help you while we stand together and encourage you by singing this song.